The Breakfast Club.
Good morning, everyone. Jack Heffron joined by Glenn McFarlane. Morning, you, Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Jack. How are you going? A bit teary-eyed, bleary-eyed this morning as well.
Why, did you go out last night?
No. Just late night for me as usual, but no, all good. It is sad, our last show, but it's going to be a beauty.
It is.
And, the Novak Djokovic things rolls on. You wouldn't want to be out to lunch with Alex Hawke, would you, and be waiting on his lunch order? Like, come on, mate. Just make a decision.
Lunch would become afternoon tea really quickly. What about yesterday? So I know we're starting the show with
Sorry, that was my little...
We said we weren't going to, but... So yesterday, we start to get some text messages through that, oh, geez, Scott Morrison's doing a press conference.
Yeah,
oh,
wow.
And then you think, okay, we're going to line all the ducks up. And I was almost at the point where I was going to send in our WhatsApp, like, okay, we better do something on Novak here because he's going home, et cetera, et cetera. So I was in the car driving back up to do basketball last night, listening to... first I was listening to AW, thinking, well, if anyone's going to play Scott Morrison, it's AW. They listened to about 4 minutes of it and cut to a break. They could sense the BS meter was as high as it's ever been. So I went to Auntie, the ABC,
nothing,
Craig's
zero.
Mob, went to the ABC. After about 4 minutes, the host there said, we're just going to leave Scott Morrison there for now. He's called this press conference, which I think we all assume was going to be about Novak Djokovic because it was in line with the Australian Open draw being put back.
You start to get a bit suspicious, don't you?
Not so, one mention of Novak at all.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
We still don't know what's going on.
We don't. And hopefully we will today, which is exactly what I said 24 hours ago. But the good thing is we've got something else to distract us today, and that's the start of the fifth and final test. So I'm excited about that.
Yep.
Excited. The feeling is that Scotty Boland hopefully will get through that little fitness test and we'll play. That'd be awesome.
What about the back page of your paper today? The Herald Sun, by the way. Checkmate. Scotty Boland set for a six-figure pay rise.
That's what you want to
read. Not unlike yourself,
Matt. Oh, six-figure pay rise. There's a couple of decimal points in there for me, I think. But isn't it great to see a guy and how your life can change? Like he was earning good money. Don't get me wrong. He's earning good money on, you know, playing Sheffield Shield cricket or whatever else he's doing. But to actually get, that sort of pay increase, it changes your life. He's got a young family. I haven't had one of those where it changes my life yet, Jack. And at my age, it may not be coming, but you just never know. And I think it just goes to show what a great story this has been.
0416 90 50 52 to join us this morning on the Summer Breakfast Club. It's our last show before we hand it back to Whitey and half for the year on Monday. You can also join us on the phone, 1-300-652-927. Coming up later on in the show, Ryan Harris will talk Ashes. Craig Gabriel will talk tennis as well. And the Friday form is back. Dean Lester will be set and ready to go. I think Nicole Thomas from the Tab might be joining us today, too.
So she might, no Quinny today, so...
Do I need to read something into that?
I don't know. Is he on the Gold Coast?
No, my slaughter of the Tab odds last week.
Oh, no, you were fine last week. You were fine.
Well, it took me until the second segment to work out how to find the fluctuations.
I'm glad you said that word correctly. That's always a difficult one to say at this particular time of the morning. And no, I always get a bit nervous because the early mail yesterday... No good. We need to leave Whitey and half with something. So we've got something special coming up today. I think we've got a really good chance. I know I've said that a couple of times.
Do you? Go on.
So I know. I think the Galagotis family are. I love that particular stable.
Yes.
And I think they've got one today that I think can and will win.
I think this is a wise decision by you and Nick because the Galagotis stable. They're not the type to push one if it doesn't deserve to be pushed.
Correct.
They'll push it if it's worth pushing.
Correct. And I think this one is worth pushing.
Mm.
So I'm excited and, I have been excited before, but this is the one. We need to go out with a bang, I think.
Good. Let's go out with a bang. Magic Millions is on at the moment. Mickey Felgate, Gareth Hall are up there doing some very nice work for us at RSN 927. But I'm hearing that... it's not just COVID. I'm hearing there's a bit of a flu or a virus type thing that's sweeping around the Magic Millions at the moment as well.
Tell more.
What about, so one of my good mates with two first names, Cam and Luke, went there and planned his whole week. In fact, has planned most of his year around the Magic Millions
as
and all that stuff. And he had a few functions locked in. He's a cash operator, so he had a few functions locked in. Is in bed.
Oh, no.
Crook as a dog. and doesn't have COVID. Has been tested twice. Wow. Has got all the results back. Cannot get out of bed, the poor bugger.
So,
and it's not COVID.
When you agree to do a cashie, Jack, I don't do cashies, so that's not me. When you agree to do a cashie and you don't front, you don't get the cash.
There's no cashie.
There's no cashie.
Here, there is no cash. All right.
Oh, no.
Cash, no.
And to be honest, a lot of the cashy men, as we speak, they've not had a big couple of years, really, with COVID. COVID's hurt. So you need to take advantage of these opportunities.
Yeah, what we should have done today. I've just thought of this. We're getting your top five today of...
top five cashies.
Best rock stars. Can you just, on the fly, can you give us, before the end of this hour, can you give us the top five...
I'll have a think.
...cashy operators?
I'll have a good...
I'll try and help you.
I need you to help me with this one. I've got a couple already, so that's good.
0416905052 to join us on the text. Last night in the Big Bash, or yesterday and last night in the Big Bash, two games, the Hobart Hurricanes 6-for-177 on the back of an outstanding innings from Matthew Wade, 83 not out. Defeated the Sydney Thunder, Riley Meredith and Jordan Thompson, the cricketer, not the tennis player, took three wickets each. So
there's a double name again. One of those double names.
Another one of those. So the Thunder, their six-game winning streak comes to an end. And then the Melbourne Stars take on the Melbourne Renegades, which, without being too negative, but that was as ho-hum a Stars versus Renegades game as you're likely to see.
It was.
It just didn't have the crowd there. It didn't have the atmosphere. It didn't have the build-up. It's been a difficult season for the Big Bash. The Stars 4-for-123. Glenn Maxwell made 68 not out. Defeated the Renegades 7-for-122. Aaron Finch batted at 5 last
night. He did. What was going on there?
I had no idea.
Yeah, I couldn't really understand that. I mean, Fraser McGurk was good early and Marsh didn't really get a start, but I couldn't understand why he would back down there. But the only positive out of that was to see Glenn Maxwell happy again, scoring runs, opening the batting. Are they a sneaky chance?
Oh,
probably not.
Maybe.
Probably not.
Are they the sort of team, Macca, if they get there, you'd be slightly worried?
You wouldn't want to play
their
them.
Their season's been disrupted, and we understand all of those things. But are they the sort of team that if they got to the finals and you drew them in a 3-v-4 or 4-v-5 scenario as it is in the Big Bash, you go, geez, okay, we've got the Stars in an elimination final, because there's some match winners in that team.
There are some match winners, and that's why you wouldn't want to take them on, but in a final, they don't win finals. So, sorry, that's just me, because I barrack for them.
No, they don't.
And I get sucked in every year thinking, and both of these teams have been decimated by COVID, so we've got to probably put that little rider on it. And that was the only positive last night, to really watch Glenn Maxwell and to see him with a bit of a smile on his face too, I think was really good after what's been a really difficult month or so.
Did you hear him at the toss?
I did, yeah.
Tommy Morris with the new hair.
With
the new feathers. Did you have a good look at the feathers?
I did. Yeah. And that was why I was watching the toss. You can definitely see the difference. Yeah. So there's top five feathers, I think, at some stage we need to. If we're coming back next summer, top five feathers. So might be the way to go in the future.
So at the toss, Tom Morris says, blah, blah, blah. So you've won the toss and you've elected to bat. Why have you made that decision? And then he says, any changes? And Glenn Maxwell goes... there might be, but I'm actually not sure.
It was funny. It was good. I like
it. Well, it shows the Stars. They've had that many changes.
Well,
he's lost track of it all.
Ins and outs. Seriously, it's been busy, hasn't it? It's been a busy schedule for the selectors, but they've got through, almost got through, and been able to get through. And I think that's the key, isn't it?
NBL last night, the Illawarra Hawks 97 in their first game since December the 19th, defeated the Sydney Kings 89. Sam Froling 27 points, 9 rebounds, and Tyler Harvey back to some good form as well with 23 points. So a nice result there. And tonight it's Melbourne United's
United
turn.
Tonight?
This is going to be a very strange scenario. Not a new scenario, but we saw a lot of it last season. Closed gym. So there'll be no crowd. It'll be only players and officials from both Melbourne and New Zealand, and that's it.
Did you see the footage from the States about one of their closed games where the mascot got into trouble? Did you see that? That was sensational. The mascot got into trouble because he was trying to put the opposition off and was warned.
He was, yeah.
There you go. I like that.
It's just a very, very strange world.
It's a strange world we live in these days, but we're getting used to it somehow. Let's hope we can get out of that soon.
From the text, 0416905052, Aaron Finch has played his last game for Australia. Unfortunately, it's time for the likes of Ben McDermott to get a go.
Interesting. Ben McDermott has to get a go at some stage. One of the more exciting cricketers to watch, isn't he, when he's in full flight? So, not sure about Finch. I think he's probably got a little bit longer to go, hopefully. Fingers crossed. But We are going to have a transition period with Australian cricket. I don't think there's any doubt that's coming up. When you've got two 35-year-old openers today, and yeah. I'm comfortable with that. I think it was the right call. But we are getting to a stage where there will be a bit of a transition in all forms of the game as well, where we need to make a few changes at some stage.
And I think Aaron Finch, he's sort of carried a nagging knee injury around for the last 18 months.
Yep.
He played and put everything into the T20 World Cup and they won it, and Finchie was captain, which is fantastic. And then he kind of came back to the Big Bash when he wasn't fully fit.
Yeah.
He's probably forced it when he had to and didn't want to. He just needs a breather now.
He does.
He needs 6 months of...
He does.
Going back to Colac.
Yep.
Heading down to Murray Street, finding one of the three pubs in Murray Street and Colac, and just having a few beers and
how
relaxing.
How much fun would that be? Yeah. Scotty Gullen country, isn't it, Colac?
It is.
It's sort of... country there, and I think they've got, is there a statue to Scotty, Aaron Finch and Scotty in
and Luke
one
Hodge.
End of town? And Luke Hodge.
It's next to Hodgie's statue.
Oh, there you go. So
does the statue of Gullen need to be adjusted, though, with the long hair?
With the long hair and the...
Can you go and
the,
put a wig on him, like Boris Johnson sort of wig?
I think that's the way to go. Do you reckon he's had a spell this week? He's had a breakthrough and he's had a haircut? Or
no.
I don't think he would have.
No.
This is his summer look.
No, I think it's going to stick around.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think he's kind of grown into... You remember, you know, Tom Petrovsky from the ComSec crosses?
Tom Petrovsky, do I ever?
So Tom Petrovsky grows a beard, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, who's this bloke? Everyone loves him.
Is he still rocking with a beard? I think he is still rocking with a beard.
But you don't...
He's kept it going. I thought, this is just a summer period, but no, he's kept it going for a number of years now.
I'm a bit worried, actually. There could be a bit of internal politics at ComSec, because you don't see Tom Petrovsky doing as many crosses as what he used
really?
To. Craig Jones gets a few of these gigs now.
This is what happens. You don't give a sucker an even break. I've told you about that.
So. Exactly right, Half and Whitey. I hope you're listening. 0416 90 50 52. Now, Macca, I said yesterday that I had to go and do a bit of shopping.
How'd you go?
Well, for those who missed it, I have made a very, very brief comeback to playing cricket.
Yes.
Played two games, and work is just making it too hard at the moment. So I'm not sure how many more I'm going to get to play, but I did enjoy the two games that I played. In that time, in my last game, I knew I was retiring 4 years ago, whatever it was. I threw everything out. Gave some stuff to some of the younger players and whatever. Gave all my bats away and all that sort of stuff. Because I knew I'd never play again. So when I decided to make my comeback, it all happened very quickly and I went, I've got nothing. So I sort of rung around and said, oh, who's got spare pads and who's got a spare helmet and a bat I can use and all that sort of stuff. I didn't have a bag. Which is kind of important when you're playing cricket. You need a bag to put everything in. So it was all just floating in my boot. You know, I'd go and grab the bat out of the back of the boot and then the gloves and all that sort of stuff. My box would be bouncing around. I've lost the pads.
Oh, no.
I took the lawnmower to get fixed on the Saturday morning of the second game I played. And I reckon somewhere in amongst all that, the pads have fallen out.
Oh, no.
So I had to go shopping yesterday to replace my best mate's pads, because that's the right thing to do. Yeah. Even though I'm not going to use them, he will. How bloody expensive is cricket equipment these days?
I said that to you.
Jesus.
When I was a kid growing up, and I was thinking, oh, this is easy, do this. And then a few years ago, I made a comeback in the vets, the over 40s, and my son's trying to talk us into playing a game in a week or so's time as
well. Oh,
really? Yeah, I think COVID's hit a number of the sporting teams and cricket teams, and I'm like, I'm not sure I can. It is so expensive, cricket equipment, isn't it? It is so expensive. And I'd love the listeners to, you've lost your mate's pads. You're going to tell us how much it is, but I'd love a couple of the listeners to text in or call in. What have you lost that wasn't yours, that was pretty significant? Because clearly, every man likes to keep his own batting pads, and you've lost them. How much are we talking, Jack?
130 lighter.
130.
For the experience?
65 each.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
That hurts.
So then, while you're there, and you can't help it.
You got to buy something else.
I didn't buy anything, thankfully. But while I'm there and I'm looking at everything... I started looking at the bats.
So you got,
and I started picking up the bats. And as I say, I didn't buy anything because I'm not sure how many games I'm going to play. You talk about things that are expensive now. How much does a cricket bat cost?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I bought one about 4 or 5 years ago. I bought a Dave Warner one about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, the Kaboom?
Kaboom, which was the most ridiculous thing, because if you've ever seen me play cricket, I'm not a Kaboom kind of player. I'm not a Kaboom, but I got sucked in by it, and this is pre-Sandpaper Gate and the like. I thought, this is a big bat. It's going to make me some runs. You cannot fail with this bat. And then I realised you can actually fail with the bat. And I look like an idiot, a Chris Tavare, you know, slow opening batsman, batting with a bat that should be used by David Warner. It was ridiculous.
You needed more like a bat by Chris Rogers or something.
A Chris Rogers bat. I did. Certainly not a David Warner bat. So they're so expensive bats, aren't they?
I loved playing around with them all. But I love when I actually played, I was a genuine cricket bat nuffy. I used to love them and all that sort of stuff. But the point I'm getting at here is that I went back and thought to myself, I reckon my first cricket bat didn't cost that. It didn't cost anywhere near that amount of money.
No way.
So then driving back from the shop, I started to get all nostalgic, Macca, about my first cricket bat. Now, I reckon everyone has played cricket in any format. You can be a really good local cricketer. You can be a real pox local cricketer like I was. But you've got memories of your first cricket bat. They say you never forget your first. Well, and I'm talking about cricket bats
here. You are, aren't you? I'm sure you are.
But you never forget your first. So 0416 9050 52. It's our last show, so we want to do it with a smile on our face today. Tell us the first cricket bat you own, your memories of it.
Absolutely.
If you made any runs with it, by all means, we want to hear your stories. But also on the phone, 1300 652 927. The first cricket bat you owned.
There were a couple of crappy ones that are the family ones that you had. You weren't playing serious cricket with. And I've still got the original one, which is a tiny little bat. But my first one was a grey nickel scoop. I think it was might have been a GN100 or something, the really old style scoops.
So the one scoop?
The one scoop. Yep. They didn't have the double scoop when I first started playing. So we had the one scoop was the first one. And you thought you were pretty cool if you had a one scoop. and they weren't cheap. They weren't as expensive as they were. So I started using it in the under 12s. I think I started in under 12s when I was, I don't know, 9 or 10 or something like that. Started using that, but I'd also use it in the street, which is ridiculous. And my mum and dad would go, this is a bit expensive to be using that. So the one scoop, and then I had to go to the double scoop when the double scoop came in. But I also wanted to get a Gunn and Moore bat because my name, Glenn McFarlane. I thought the bat was named after me.
Sense,
The GM bat, the Gunn and Moore bat. So I used to have one of them as well. And then the kaboom still is in the McFarlane household, but it's put away in the cupboard now because it didn't. There was not a lot of kaboom when I got the David Warner kaboom.
So no one's using the kaboom right now?
No. It's just there like a relic of the past now, 4 or 5 years old. But this is a real regret. I don't have my original one scoop Grey Nichols bat, and it's disappointing because you should keep your first serious bat, shouldn't you?
Definitely. Should hang on to it. See, my first was the double scoop, so the Grey Nichols Diner Drive.
Oh, really?
Which I reckon off the top of my head it might have been Michael Slater that was using that at the time. And Slater was, you know, early to mid-90s when I was sort of a youngster. Michael Slater, we're going to do rock stars a little bit later on. Yep. Michael Slater, rightly or wrongly, was a rock star of cricket back
then. Sure was.
So he was kind of like, I got the Diner Drive and I thought that was pretty cool. And then the next bat after that, Macca, was I'm trying to get the model right. It was a Mark War. I reckon it was a V100.
Right.
A Slazenger Mark War V100.
The Mark War Slazenger. Yeah, I remember that as well. So have you got any of them still?
No. And I wish I did.
Yeah, that's the frustrating. I was only thinking about that when we talked about this yesterday, about a topic, and thinking, wouldn't you love to have your... I've got the little tiny bat that I had when I was a tiny little kid.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't have the grey nickels there as well. You can tell the difference of age between you and I. You're saying the Michael Slater bat. I would have been saying like a Greg Chappell or a David Hooks type bat. So anyway, I was young when I started. That's all I'll say. Let's go, Dino. Race 6, we start with the first leg of the quaddy over 1400, the VRC event staff handicap. Huge field to start with, Dean. The Price Kent trained Over the Sky is the favourite and has won twice fresh. Is that where you're heading at the moment? But it is a really tough race, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to throw a few at this, Macca. It looks a really tough quaddy, full stop, but this is an open race. But in saying that, we might get some value, and one of those is number 8, Field of Roses, who I thought was very good winning first up at Sandown, as beat Peldoro, who won well at Caulfield during the week, and has since been back to the trials, trialled well. I just think being kept on the fresh side by Philip Stokes, and I think they found a very suitable race here. So I'm going to go with number 8, Field of Roses. A very interesting runner here, number 12, Celestial Soul. He's a winner first up. He's very capable on his day, but he was a hit-and-miss horse. He's had the Alderman gear change. He's now a gelding, and he's trialled up very well in recent weeks. I think he can run well. 10, a dandy man's very fit, racing well, well-drawn, drops in weight on its last run's got a chance. Over the Sky is good talent. He obviously has been very sparingly raced by the stable, and he's won half of his starts, so he's got to be regarded. But I'm giving little chances to the Simon Zara trained pair, 13 Divine Diosa, who's trialled up quite nicely, and 17 Zach DeBoss now gets into the field. Had a pretty tough run last start, but ran okay and will be fitter again. But I just thought that in an even race, Field of Roses looked a bit over the odds.
Yeah, I like that. Nicole, what sort of value we got from Dino there with number 8 to start us on the quaddie leg there?
Yeah, number 8, Field of Roses, $15 into 14 there as well. And I will mention Celestial Soul, number 12, 9 out to 13. A Dandaman, number 10, was mentioned as well. It's been $13 into 9, so good support there. There's good money for Over the Sky, number 1, $5.50 into $4.80. And Niccolo Vito, number 4, has been $10 into $6 as well. So, plenty of punters betting up already in that first leg.
And Dino, no Nicolai Vito there. What was your rationale behind that?
Just 7 doesn't go into 6, Macca. if one of those is scratched that I've mentioned, he goes straight in.
Yeah, it's a tough leg, tough start. But as you say, plenty of value. The numbers for everyone with a pen, 8, 12, 10, 1, 13 and 17. So we'll get that first leg up. That'll be beautiful. And then we obviously head to the time-honoured Standish Handicap, race 7. This is a really good field. We see Tarath making the racetrack return. Tough race, Dino. Again, it doesn't get any easier. Is this one we can perhaps pare back a little bit?
A little bit. I'm really pleased for the VRC. Firstly, they moved the Standish from New Year's Day and they've been well rewarded with a terrific field tomorrow. So, I thought a horse that ran in the Christmas Stakes at Caulfield behind Marabi, and I think Marabi's the most progressive sprinter we've got in Melbourne, was Outlaw's Revenge, who ran 5th over from Adelaide for Ryan Balfour, number 9. And just watching the replay of that race, it took a long time to get his spot trying to get in behind them. And no sooner he got there, he had to get going again. And it was a pretty good run, really. And I just hope he just comes down the outside of the straight, blends into the race, and he can run very well, number 9. 10, It's Our Times on the back up from last week. Dropped 5.5 kilos for that run. This is obviously a stronger race, but I think it's a good race for him as he's a winner down the straight. He won at the Flemington Spring Carnival. The Astrologist, talking of straight track specialists, he raced there exclusively over the winter and early spring, and he did a great job. He's had 2 trials. He's looked okay, but they've been around the tight inner track at Flemington, and he gets now to his happy hunting ground of the straight track at Flemington. He'll run well. And Turath, as you mentioned, Macca, had a fantastic spring, and she's probably destined for bigger races even than this in the autumn. Kicks off the back of a trial recently at Terang where she went quite well. I'd expect her to run well. But it's a good race, but I'm going for Outlaw's Revenge, again, at a little bit of value.
And where's the money going here at the moment, Nicole?
Yeah, It's Our Time. Number 10's been really well backed. It's one of the equal favourites at $4.80. Has been $5.50 into that quote. Turath is also at $4.80, but has been solid. Number 3. Number 1, The Astrologist, 6 into $5. So there's some money there. Maleva, number 5, has also been 7 into 6. Then we go down to some other moves. Not too many others to report. Hal Vorson's in the market at $7. And Outlaw's Revenge, of course, Dean's top pick, number 9, is an $8.50 chance. An excellent value there. But best backed, It's Our Time. That's number 10, the equal favourite at $4.80.
Dino, I read an article this morning with Matt de Kock in the Herald Sun about Hal Vorson, winner of this event before and a winner of a Group 3 before in 2020, just never came up last year.
No, and had a series of issues. And I think his form since he's had those issues has been better at 1,000 and 1,100. And I think a strongly run 1,200 might be just at the back end of his distance range now as he's got older. So that's why I've left him out. But he is obviously a very effective straight horse. 15 of his last 16 runs have been down the straight, though, so he hasn't had much option to do anything else.
God bless Hal Vorson. Yes. There's a roof over my head still because of Vorson in the Spring Carnival. Thanks, Robbie and Matt. So the numbers there, Dino, 9, 10, 1 and 3. So there's a bit of value there to start, I reckon, Jack, isn't there?
Good.
So
we like that.
We do like that. And then we head to race 8, Dino. Race 8, obviously, we're looking at another difficult race over the 2,000 metres. There's four or five horses vying for favouritism, and Paddy Payne's Mark Hole is one of them.
Yeah, and one of the chances too, Macca, but as you said, this is a tough affair. I'm going with Convict Sam. He's come back from a long time off racing in really good form for Archie Alexander. He won two in a row, and then last start, I thought he closed off really well in the race here last time out, and he's got as good a chance as any. Josh Richards riding really well, and he has won on the horse previously. To beat 12 Mark Holt, the horse you mentioned, his win at Moonee Valley was good because I don't think Moonee Valley suited him that well. I think getting to the bigger track will be in his favour. Getting to 2,000 metres will be in his favour. He's drawn wide, but he's likely to go back anyway, and I think he can run very well. Six Midas Prince really turned his form around last start. That was a terrific run. With a bit of luck, he may well have won that race. He just got held up at a crucial stage with about 100 metres to go and went to the line the last little bit, a touch untested. So his run was very good. He's close to a win. 16, Sacred Lass. I just thought she rode too close to a fast speed last start and weakened, but she's been freshened up, drops in weight and can bounce back. And 14, Redwood Shadows. Taken a while to hit form, but that wasn't a bad win last start, and he'll get a cheap run, and with Mark Zahra aboard, that's an absolute plus. But it's a very even race and a lot of different form lines, making it a tough race to line up.
Yeah, and is it a hard race, Nicole, obviously, to frame a market for, isn't it? It's pretty open, this particular race.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, and punters with plenty early here in this really open race. Mark Holt is the favourite, though, $7 into 6, number 12. And then we've got Convict Sam, Dean's top pick, number 5, $6.50 out to the $7 quote. Redwood Shadow, there's a bit of specking here early for number 14, $7.50 into $7, with some good money for Midas Prince, number 6, been $9 into $7.50. And then we've got Brassada, number 4, on the drift out to $9.50. Tycoon Beck, $9.50 as well, but interestingly, there's been some money for some roughies, and one of them that Dean mentioned, Sacred Last, number 16. This has been 21 into 17. Also, a little bit of money for Running Cloud, the roughie, number 13, has been that same 21 into 17. And also, Takumi, number 9, the biggest roughie that's been supported, $31 into 19.
Yeah, there's a bit of some odds there, Dino, isn't there? It's good to play with that. So, the numbers there, we're taking 5 in that leg, numbers 5, 12, 6, 16, and 14.
One leg to go, Macca. Let's finish strong here.
The most important leg. Well, they're all important, aren't they? But you've got to get the last leg if you get the first, and I'm sure Dino will. We're coming home with a tough one, though, Dino. Race 9, 1,600 metres. There's plenty of chances here.
Yeah, fillies and mares race, Macca, and again, different form lines. Again, I'm going for a bit of value. So even though we're taking a lot of numbers here, if we get it somewhere near right, I think this quarter will pay well. And I think number 11, Star of Eden's ready to fire. I think she's had the two runs back, and she usually takes a couple of runs to hit form. And I thought her run at Caulfield was very good. For that, she drops 4 kilos in weight. Jai McNeil takes the ride. She's going to be up on the speed. I think she'll run really well. Number 15, Pitchinun. Was a very good win at Moonee Valley. I thought she was in a bit of trouble coming to the turn, but then really knuckled down and won well. And again, whilst this is a harder race, she dropped 6.5 kilos. For an up-and-comer, I think that's a good sign. Number 6, Mississippi. I thought she could win last time at Flemington, and probably with a little bit better luck she would have, but she's going well and she's got a chance. And 10, Picaroon, who stepped out to 1,600 for the first time in her career, daughter of Fiorente, and gee, it was an impressive win in Adelaide last start. She just rounded them up and won well. Got a very good record, only had the 9 starts for 3 wins. She's a chance. Might have missed the winner. It's a really hard race. We've got to take a bit of a trim up somewhere.
Left out the favourite, American Angel. Was there a rationale behind that?
I think that probably Star of Eden was a run behind, or a couple of runs behind her fitness-wise, so she might be able to turn the tables. And you know, Stay Gold comes through the same form line, same sort of form line. So there's horses there that I've left out that have got legitimate chances, but I'd like to get to the last leg and have a dividend running, and we might even be able to have something on American Angel then. But, yeah, it's a tough finish.
And, Nicole, number 11, Star of Eden, some pretty good value there.
There is, and it's been backed as well. So it started off $15, drifted as far as $16, and then it's now into $13. So there's good support for Star of Eden, number 11. But the favourite is American Angel, number 12, $7.50 into $5, and it's probably the best back runner in the last here early. Mississippi is next in the market. Well, it was. It's out to $7.50 now. It's on the drift, with Picaroon being supported into second favourite now, number 10, $7.50 into $6.50. The other one there's good money for, Modern Millie, number 3, this has gone $11 into $8. With Pitch and Nut, I know it was mentioned, number 15, it's a $9.50 chance in the market, has drifted out slightly, but it did reach 10, so some specking into that. But good money there for Star of Eden, the top pick, number 11. But American Angel, or Mary Kane Angel, I should say, has been the best back, with some money for Picaroon and Modern Millie as well.
Nicole, while you're there, just quickly, Dino's celebrity that he would most like to meet is Dave Grohl. Who's yours?
Oh, yeah, I remember Dave Grohl. That's my era, Nirvana as well. look, it's a question without notice.
I know.
I'm not. It's a tough one. You know what? I'm going to say one a bit controversial here.
Go on.
I'm going to say Donald Trump.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Wow.
Straight to the top.
Yeah. Straight to the top, yes.
No messing around with Nicole. No. I like that. Dino, how would you go in a conversation with Donald Trump, do you think?
Oh, if we're on the golf course, it'd be just fine. But if we start talking anything else, it'd be in trouble.
He cheats on the golf course, though, Dino. He's a bit like
Kim Jong-un,
our friend from North Korea.
Caddyshack.
Exactly.
He's not as good as
out of the rough.
He's not as good as Kim Jong-un. He had 14
freak.
Holes in ones in his first
freak.
Round of golf.
Freak. Absolute freak. Yeah.
And that was whilst breaking the 100-meter world record for swimming.
And you know, the first time he played cricket, which is not a known sport in his part of the world, he made 562 in his
what
first game.
What sort of bat was he using?
Great Nichols. Borrowed Dino's. Righto, let's just get those quaddy numbers again, because let's from go. The text here, the fat controller says, I missed the quaddy numbers as I was getting cross with Thomas and the other tank engines for making too much noise.
Oh, very
good.
Keys
get better every week.
It does.
Let's give us
let's
the quaddy
numbers. Let's start with the quaddy numbers. It's going to be a juicy quaddy if we can get it, and I think we can. Race 6, first leg, 8, 12, 10, 1, 13, and 17. The second leg, race 7, 9, 10, 1, and 3. The third leg, race 8, 5, 12, 6, 16, and 14. And the coming home in the lucky last, race 9, 11, 15, 6, and 10.
We'll get all of those up on our socials as well, our Twitter feeds and our Facebook feed also. So the quaddy's done. Let's move to the formula bet for this weekend, Dino.
Yes, it's for Emma Bussatil of Brown Hill. And for Emma, we're having $40 to win race 1, number 7, English Riviera. $40 to win race 3, number 8, Under My Spell. $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 1, number 7, into race 3, number 8. And that's for Emma Bussatil of Brown Hill.
Well done to you, Emma. Good luck. Let's try and find ourselves one at a little bit of a price.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Roughy for the all-new Kia Stinger. Fine-tuned for Australian conditions. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger today.
Just before we get Dino's Rammer Roughy for this weekend, and Nicole, the formula bet, I should say, what sort of numbers is Dino punching out there for our listener this week?
Yeah, race 1, number 7, $2.40 currently, and then we head to race 3, number 8, Under My Spell, $4.20, and there's been some very good specking for Under My Spell as well in race 3. So $4.20 and $2.40.
Outstanding.
Outstanding, isn't it? So now we need a Friday fill-up, is that right?
Oh, we'll go Ruffy first.
Oh, we'll go Ruffy, of course.
Then yes, we're going to finish up with a fill-up.
Yes.
Had a few to choose from, as you can tell by the quaddy numbers, but I'm going to go with race 6, number 8, Field of Roses. I thought that horse was over the odds and would run very well.
Ooh,
and
yes.
Nicole, what sort of price are we getting for race 6, number 8, Field of Roses?
Field of Roses currently a $12 chance there, race 6, number 8, $15 into 12, so a little bit of money for it as well.
Outstanding.
Exactly.
We like that.
Can I ask Dino quickly about Magic Millions? I just would like to know, Dino, you've obviously had a good look there, and clearly COVID's not the only thing on the Gold Coast, because money clearly is, because they're spending a lot of money on horses. Yep. What sort of price would you need to get from your perspective to back Coolangatta?
I think that the price that she is right now at about the $2 is more than acceptable. I think the danger, and if you're playing the race, I'd be sort of playing Coolangatta and Miss Hellfire is the other one. I liked her win last week. She ran significantly quicker than the boys, and just a good sense of timing. The Snowdens are very good at the two-year-olds as well, and they've won a Magic Million. So's Kieran and Dave with Coolangatta. So I'm going to the stables that have done it before. And Coolangatta, clearly the one to beat. But Miss Hellfire, if you're having Quinella's trifectas, I'll be throwing her in for sure.
Off-air conversations are about to make on-air conversations because that we talk about during the breaks.
So that you left this to the last show because this could be the last time I appear on RSN.
I know. Ooh. If you're going to do it, you may as well go out with a bang. We are doing today Macca's top five football rock stars.
Absolutely. Now, the rock stars, I want us to talk about guys who are rock stars on the field, but rock stars off it as well. And it sort of came up because we're talking about Bailey Smith and you know, how many Instagram followers? He's got more than I have. I barely even look at Instagram. I've probably got about five followers. I think it might have been my kids might be a couple as well.
You haven't got a burner account?
No. Like I know some people around here.
Oh, yeah.
Mentioning any names. Oh, yeah. Who do have burner accounts. So yep. I did say that to my daughter one day. We reckon I should have it. She goes, no, come on, you're too old for that.
It's a bit shifty.
You're shifty and you're too old. What are you going to use that
for? Or two accounts. There's been a few that have come undone with two accounts.
Unusual names. So yeah. Change the name. Yep. Anyway, top five rock stars. I'm not going to give you a 1 to 5. It's impossible. They're all rock stars. How do you rate them?
Okay.
Like, unless you desperately want me to.
No,
but anyway.
No.
I don't want you
to do something you don't want to do.
This is a band. This is a band. This is, you know, this is the Foo Fighters together of top five rock stars. And I'm talking about rock stars on the field. Absolutely outstanding to watch. Great players. But also, gee, they could work after dark as well. They could get out and about.
Yes.
Hit the dance floor when we used to be able to dance on dance floors. We can't
now can we? Unless you're with Hillsong.
I was about to say that. You beat me with that. And I'm glad you did because you might not be on either next time as well.
Who cares? I don't care about
that. So here we go. Let's go through. And I spoke to one yesterday. And he's just about my favourite footballer of all time because he's just the best bloke. And I know that you love him as well. A guy called Shane Wayne Crawford.
Shane Wayne.
Who... Yes. Is one of the best blokes you would ever meet. He's on the Gold Coast at the moment, looking at some horses for the Magic Millions. How big was he at the time? He had his documentary. Caro was smashing him on some of the footy
Being
shows.
Being on a footy show, that's right.
Being
yeah.
on a footy show, yep. And he had his pants pulled. No, was that Shane?
Yeah, he pulled Sam's pants down.
Yep. We're talking of rock stars. Sam gets an honourable mention here.
Say,
he was
he'd
a
be
rock
close.
Star in his day.
Yeah,
but I've got Shane Crawford there, right at the top of the tree.
I love that.
He was an outstanding operator in terms of his footy, and gee, he just a rock star. Everyone wanted to be Shane Crawford. He was a superstar, and still is.
Yeah, absolutely.
After all these years. Now, another guy who I want to put at the higher, you know, right at the top, St Kilda didn't have a lot going for it back then. In the 70s and 80s, didn't have a lot going for it. They did have Trevor Barker. Now, he's certainly a long time before you were born. The late, great Trevor Barker. Again, one of the great humans of all time, Trevor Barker, was a superstar. Go and Google his marks on the field. Mm. He was one of the great marks of all time. But some of his work in the Saints disco, honestly, outstanding and outside. And if I could turn back time, I won't go any further then. If I could turn back time and go to that Saints disco.
That would be
cool. How good would that be?
That'd be awesome.
With Sher music in the background.
Sher music in the background.
Turn back time. Yep. There you go.
Sensational.
Not going any further. Trevor Barker was a superstar on and off the field. And God, what a great player and a great man.
What would they... If they didn't have Trevor Barker, St Kilda, they'd have been completely irrelevant, wouldn't they, for a period of time?
For a period of time, they would have. You went to watch him. Before Tony Lockett came along, you went to watch St Kilda because of Trevor Barker. And I'm not sure if it's true, but there was a rumour around that, you know, the formula that goes into the tipping of your hair. Per capita, around Moorabbin, there was more tipping of the hair qualities going on there than any other place in Australia.
I'd believe that.
And like I could have also, with rock stars, had the father-son connection with Neil Roberts, who was a rock star and still is a superstar, Brownlow medalist, with his son Michael Roberts
Rubbo.
As well.
You could have got Rubbo in
with
there.
With his son Michael Roberts as far as rock stars. But we had Trevor Barker in there. The one, I know Dino thinks that I do a bit too much Collingwood, but you've got to have this bloke in. He was an absolute rock star. Darren Mullane, the late, great Darren Mullane, who sadly has been gone for a long time. He was a rock star. Like, he was an unbelievable footballer. And we probably, this sounds ridiculous, given how good he was in 1990. We probably never saw the best of Darren Mullane. He died at 26.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
That's so
when you
sad,
think about
isn't it?
It.
Yeah.
He was just on the cusp of, he was a superstar anyway. But off the field, he made the tunnel what the tunnel was.
The tunnel
he was
nightclub.
Unbelievable at the tunnel. the only nightclub that I can remember that they used to go around selling meat pies in the middle of a disco.
Did they really?
What the hell's going on here? So Darren was the superstar. There was a corner there that I think to this day, it's closed obviously now, has still got a plaque there that it was Pants' Corner. And Darren Mullane, when he died, was one of the biggest stories I've ever been a part of when you think about it. A superstar in his prime dying in the way he died. The Herald Sun made an absolute squillion dollars out of death notices from Darren Mullane. Everyone wanted to put a death notice in.
Oh, of course.
There were a lot of girls that thought Darren was the one and only.
Oh, no.
He was a great player, Darren.
Oh, no.
On and off the field. And just I know he had some issues and that as well, but for me, he was great as a young kid growing up. And
well, I was going to say, that would have been about the time that you got into journalism.
It was. 1990 was my first year. Yeah. I was only 12 when I started, Jack. I was very child prodigy. So how's that first year, Collingwood Grand Final?
Pretty That's incredible.
Amazing. Pretty yeah. amazing. So I've thrown in the great Dermot Brereton.
Yeah, it has to be.
Seriously.
5 day, 5 night. Oh. He would ring us and complain if he wasn't in this list.
Oh, he'd be furious.
He'd be flat if and he found that, out. I'm going to see him tomorrow as well, by the way.
You are? Well, you've got to tell him he's in.
Well, my cricket club's playing against him.
Really? Yeah. So he's playing?
Because yeah. he's captains the, pretty he captains good player, the force at Heatherhill.
Pretty good player.
He's okay.
He's okay. So he's not a five-time
no.
cricket?
No, but he's very good, Dermy. I will give him credit. He plays every week for Heatherhill.
Yeah.
Outstanding with kids. Like, teaches them out on the ground and all
that
stuff.
He's a ripping bloke, Dermy.
He's a good fella.
You know what? Old school, like really old school, always accepts your phone call and stuff like that. Wish some of the modern day people would be like that, but he's got to be in there. Like, Derm was just the ultimate rock star. Even when he was on Ernie and Denise's show, he was in the mornings, wasn't he?
Of course, so, yeah.
And the Tip Top Bread, and he was a rock star. I'm going to throw one in just because I want to play a song. Talking of rock stars, the great Wiz Warwick Capper. You've got to throw him in. My son, I never thought my son would say, how good was Warwick Capper? Like, he's watched his highlights and stuff like that. The kids of today still know, probably because Warwick tells them, the great Warwick Capper. And he had one of the great songs of all time, didn't he? What a classic.
What a classic.
I was going to say, I thought there was a bit of Milli Vanilli there, but it's still terrible, isn't it?
Shocking. Absolutely shocking. Did it, like, was it on the charts for a bit? You'll have to take us back.
I think it was. Craig would have been all over it, our great panel operator here. He's nodding his head. It was on the charts. It wasn't quite, I'm an individual, you can't fool me. But I couldn't put Jacko in the rock stars, could I? I thought about it just because I wanted to play Jacko's song.
Well, there's a lot of apologies.
And you can send
through your thoughts. 0416 90 50 52.
Let us know who's your rock star. Kekovic, Sam Kekovic. People will forget this. Like, see the Lamb ads. Kekka was once photographed nude in the Truth newspaper. When I say nude, he had a footy covering him.
That's right.
Covering the area that we didn't want to see.
His region.
His region. And he also missed, this is one of the great stories of all time, he missed a photograph, the famous photograph of the 1975 historic first North Melbourne premiership photo. Kekka was busy at the time.
He was busy.
Didn't quite make the photo. So
what was he doing, Glenn?
He had a number of people that he was seeing, and it was a busy time for Sam. They just won a flag, and I think it was one of his great regrets. For memory, did they put him in as an inset? I think.
Yes.
I can't quite recall.
I think they did. Yeah.
You know, that, but he was busy. He couldn't quite make it at the time. But what was that? Was that a bit of crisscross?
It was.
Who did they play for?
I'm not sure.
I think one of them passed away. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. It's unfortunately for the crisscross crew. Yeah. So I know what you're saying about Kekka being a rock star. See, now I see him on the Lamb ads.
Yeah, you can't quite see rock star.
But all I see is teeth now on those ads. He's gone and got the new choppers.
Yeah. Well, he made so much money.
They're too big
for
his mouth.
They are.
They're massive.
A few people. One of these days, we're going to do a top five chompers in there as well. So Kekka was on, you know, Nicole was mentioning before about Donald Trump. Kekka could ring Donald Trump up. He's got Donald's
really
mobile number. Yeah.
He's a fascinating man.
He is a fascinating. So there are a few apologies there. The great Peter Dacos, what a legend he was. Going back a few Collingwood people, Murray Wiedemann was. He was a wrestler as well. The great Terry Wallace. His gear. Yeah,
there is
his get-up and gear.
Yes.
Was outstanding. I don't know who dressed him, but it was outstanding. He was always ahead of the trends.
Tight leather pants.
Absolutely.
Shirt unbuttoned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always had, even in the middle of July, in the depths of a Melbourne winter, he was as brown could be.
Absolutely.
I don't know how he did it.
He thought, you know, I can just come to Australia unvaccinated and not having to follow the protocols that they gave me, which is just... It takes a lot of daring to do, I think, and putting a Grand Slam kind of at risk. Seems like not everyone is playing kind of by the rules of how Tennis Australia or some governments have been putting things.
That's Stefanos Tsitsipas having his say on Novak Djokovic. Everyone's having their say, Macca. Now it's at the point where even the players on the tour are voicing their displeasure, and it's not just Rafa.
No, it's not, and that's interesting, isn't it? And interesting to find out from Craig Gaber, but even the tennis, the Media Association have put out a statement saying it was deeply concerning that Novak, after testing positive, thought that he needed to do a commitment with the French newspaper as well. So
Craig Gabriel joins us on the Summer Breakfast Club. Craig, thanks for your time. How is Novak's brand within the tennis community at the moment? Is he even less popular than perhaps he already was?
You know how silver can go a really dark colour when it's been exposed to a lot?
Yep.
Well, he's lost his glint of things like silver and gold. Yeah, this is a black mark. This is going to be with him as a negative on his career, irrespective of all that he might has achieved and what he still might achieve in the future. This is going to be that black mark, and it's also going to be emphasized when Netflix finally do produce this documentary that they've started trying to put together.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, that Netflix are getting involved. This is a mess of monumental proportions really now, isn't it, Craig? If you had to look at levels of culpability, obviously Novak's at the top there, but where do you think the blame lies for the situation that we have right now?
I really think it comes down to the confusion between the governments and the contradictions which we've been going through for the last couple of years over here. One government will say one thing and then another one will counteract that and come up with something else. And the rules and regulations and guidelines change too frequently. And that adds to the whole confusion of the whole thing. Tennis Australia was the messenger. So they can't make those sort of rules. That's government policy. So they're passing on the information, and it changes so often and so frequently that it's so hard to keep up.
Yeah, it sure is.
Craig, let's play out the scenario that Novak Djokovic is allowed to stay, which is looking the less likely of the two right now. But let's say that he is. What does preparation look like for him? He's clearly the best player in the men's side of the draw, but will this be too disruptive for him to win the tournament?
You know what? He is incredibly mentally strong and can be very thick-skinned. So I think it's still going to have an impact. I mean, you can't be that thick-skinned. I mean, you've got to have feelings. He's admitted in the past that he feels it when crowds go against him on occasions. He understands it. Well, not so much understands, but feels it when there is way more adoration for Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal compared to him. So he just goes about on court doing whatever he has to get those records and results. But technically, physically, no issue whatsoever. Mm. After a while, you've got to think, even somebody like Novak, it's going to have some sort of an impact. And if the crowds start you know, being negative when he walks on court and plays a match, then, you know, it's going to be hard to concentrate, because then you'll also probably have the Serbian supporters counteracting the rest of the crowd. So it's going to be such a messy situation, and for a player to try and work through that is not easy at all.
Now, Craig, we had the crowds sliced in half, 50%. What sort of financial impact is that going to have on an event that's already strapped in terms of its finances over the past couple of years?
Yeah, look, it's not going to be easy, because this really was... I feel sad for Tennis Australia, for all the efforts that they have put in to stage these tournaments last year, and in the middle of the event you have a lockdown, and this year again it's you know, it has to have an impact. I mean, it's common knowledge that they had to dip into reserves last year to put all those tournaments on to be able to give the players jobs. You know, it's the only major out of the four that has been consistent. Wimbledon didn't play last 2020, if you remember. The U.S. Open got shifted and messed around, totally blocked out for anybody. The French Open moved and also was a closed event. So the Australian Open and the job that Tennis Australia has done over the last couple of years has been remarkable. And this should have been a year when they would have been able to reap some of the expenses that they've had to incur. But you know, now, as we know, it's a 50% attendance, and that's not going to be helpful. I mean, it'll help to some degree, but not as would have been expected.
Craig, the draw came out yesterday. How does it look for Ash Barty to your mind? It looks like Naomi Osaka, all things being equal, in the fourth round, yeah. But other than that?
Yeah, look, tough. You know, you've got, in that whole area, you've got Belinda Bencic, the Olympic gold medalist, Naomi Osaka, the defending champion. You know, a little further down, Ons Jabeur, who's top 10. Maria Sakkari, who's had a great year and is top 10. Victoria Azarenka, who's won it a couple of times. Paula Badosa, who's on a roll. You know, so there are a lot of dangerous players in Ash's path before, you know, hopefully she's able to hold the trophy, the Daphne Akhurst Cup, but she's somebody who can be able to ride all that and do it.
Craig, how pleased are you for Tanasi Kokkinakis? Oh, it's just a great story, and all the negatives we've had, it's just a great story, isn't it?
Thrilled, absolutely thrilled. He is such a good guy. He's such a great sense of humour. He's so down to earth. I love the guy. I mean, he's just the best. And I'm thrilled for him, because I've seen him on the tour year after year, or when he's not on the tour because of injuries and surgeries. And he works so hard, and he puts his heart into it all. And then suddenly there's another breakdown. I said to him the other day, I said, what have you been doing? I said, because I saw him on a monitor practicing without a shirt. And all. I said, see, you know, you are looking like a specimen, which he had a bit of a laugh at. And he said, oh, thanks for that. But he says, you know, while I might look good, it's still an effort. But hopefully, fingers crossed, he hasn't got an easy draw at the Australian Open by any means. Got a qualifier first, but more than likely second round, Rafa Nadal.
Without making any light of it, Bernard Tomic has joined Nick Kyrgios in the COVID situation of the fact that he was saying on court that he had symptoms and that he didn't go off. Is that something that you think Tennis Australia or the Australian Open officials need to sort of ram home to all the competitors? If you've got symptoms, don't be playing.
Yeah, but they have been. I mean, they've been going on about this. You've got the rapid tests are over there to get them started. Everybody's got to do a rapid test every single day that's connected and working at the tournament. And, you know, Bernie's his own worst enemy, and he carries on like a pork chop about all this sort of stuff. And, you know, if he's feeling sick and he's not feeling well and all that, well, take some action on it, you know, and don't start blaming everybody else.
Yep.
He's never taken responsibility. And, you know, then we hear him saying, oh, I'm a new Bernie Tomic and all that. But, you know, somebody said to me, maybe the white hair dye has trickled into his eyes sometimes.
Yeah, we think he should be right. But it just, have another bowl in the nets. Seems like any wicket suits Scotty at the moment. It looks like a really good wicket. A lot of the Shield games here seem to be, quite a few wickets, especially in the first few days. We haven't played a pink ball game down here. But it looks good.
Captain Fantastic Pat Cummins talking ahead of the fifth and final test today in Hobart. And Scotty Boland, Macca, looks to be a little bit sore, but it looks like he's going to get to the line.
He's a resilient Victorian, Jack. He'll get to the line, hopefully.
And I reckon the immediate rise of Scott Boland would bring a tear to the eye of one of the fast bowling cartel, Ryan Harris, who joins us once again on the Summer Breakfast Club. Morning, Ryan.
Morning, boys.
What a story this has been.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? Not surprising in my mind. I mean, I've obviously been gone now a few years playing-wise, but you know, seeing Scotty Boland the way he sort of performed in first-class cricket over a number of years now, and to see him, you know, work so hard and get an opportunity he probably wasn't expecting. Let's be honest. You know, with Richardson and even Nessa were probably in front of him, and then you know, obviously they lost Hazel and they needed someone to do exactly what he's done. I don't think anyone expected.
What is it that he does so well, Ryan? If you to drill it down in its most simple form, and you do a lot of coaching now, yeah. What has given Scott the best opportunity to translate from Shield cricket to international cricket?
Just relentless line of length, just hitting at the top of off, or what I used to try and do, sort of an inch below the top of off. He challenges the inside, outside edge, challenges the front pad, and I think if you're doing that ball after ball, I mean, you see what he's done with Joe Root, who's you know. Well, he's not number one at the moment, but he was coming into the series. He's always challenging, the dismissal, lots of modes of dismissal, and that's what he's done so well. And he obviously, you know, he gets his seam in a good position as well, which allows the ball to move, you know, either way off the wicket.
And part of the fast bowling cartel, Ryan, that Jack just mentioned, you must be so proud as well. Looking at Pat Cummins, it's his first series as a captain. Have we forever put to bed the thought or the notion or the fallacy that a fast bowler can't captain a team?
It's finally, finally someone's seen the light. I wish I had. And it's great hearing Paddy. He's a great character, and you can hear him over talks now. Every now and then, he'll say he can bowl himself when he wants, or he can bowl the bowls when he wants, or he can even put the bowls up the order if he wants to batting. it's great that he's got it, and you know, has it been too long since a bowler did? I think you've just got to pick the best person for it. And if that is a bowler, then so be it. I think, you know, he's at a stage of his career too where he's got his body in order. You know, he's going to have to miss a game here and there, but, you know, well, hopefully he doesn't. But if things keep going to plan like the Ashes, when you don't always spend the whole test match out in the field, that's going to help him. But, I mean, he's going to at some stage maybe have to miss a game here and there, but... Look, he's at a great stage with his body, and you know, he's got it where he wants it to be. And as I said, he's had a great start. As it's an easy thing to do, captain on that Cummins behalf, the way he started.
Sure is, isn't it? This is the first test in Tassie since 2016, and it's the first pink ball test. That wind swirling off the Derwent later tonight, what are you expecting it's going to do, do you think, Ryan?
Freeze. Absolutely freeze. I know how cold that gets. Well, do you know what? I've been asked just a little bit over the last few days. I don't know. There's no pink ball cricket been played down there. If it has, it hasn't been for a long time. In Shield cricket, you know, the Shield wickets, again, I haven't been playing for a while now, but, you know, hearing the Queensland guys talk, it can be quite a difficult wicket. I just heard Paddy Cummins say then in the prelude there that he's, you know, he knows that there's a lot of Shield wickets taken down there early on as well. So, I'm like everyone else. I'm just really keen to see how it goes. And again, you've got the chill in the air. It's not the humidity that, you know, might be in Brisbane or even in Adelaide, the heat. So I'm not sure what the ball's going to do.
Ryan Harris joining us here on the Summer Breakfast Club. Usman Khawaja playing in this test, Ryan. Was it just a no-brainer? Did he just have to play? And unfortunately, it's bad luck for Marcus Harris.
Oh, from a biased Queenslander boy, yes. Absolutely. But look, I think... what he did was in Sydney was unbelievable. You know, to come in and have that opportunity, he knew deep down that was potentially only one opportunity. He made them, and that's what players I love seeing happen. Players making them, you know, make selectors pick them again. You know, everyone's saying Marcus Harris is definitely the future. He's gone away. I've looked at him over these three tests that he's played or four tests, and he's definitely made improvements. I think he's still got a little bit to go. But if I assess him from a bowling point of view, if I was bowling to him, I'd still think I could get him out in certain areas, not just me, I mean, but in general in certain areas. But he's working on that, and he's made a lot of improvement. He's definitely one for the future. When it comes to this game, you know, he's had four opportunities, and he's only really got that one score, albeit it was on a tough wicket. But, you know, when you've got someone who's just made 200s and you haven't quite nailed a big score,
Unfortunately, that's the way the game goes, and that's the selection policy and the way it should be. Someone's done something very unique. It's very hard to leave someone out who's made 200.
And we saw a faint pulse and a heartbeat from England in Sydney. Can we expect a competitive effort, do you think, from them off the back of what they were able to do, particularly on that last day, and hold out?
Yeah, well, I hope so. I think that would have felt like a win, and like when you're talking about draws, you never want to celebrate too hard about a draw, but in situations like that, it is like a win, and especially, as I said, the tour they have had, it's been really disappointing, and to show some fight, it's in there. We know it's in there. They're a test cricketing nation. They're strong. They are a strong test cricketing nation. They just haven't played their best cricket. And saying that, you know, they copped a lot of stick. We haven't allowed that. We've been at our best. We haven't allowed them to play that well. They haven't won a test match here for a long time. So we know if we put them under the pump, we're going to dominate. And that's what we've done. So, look, they're definitely a good side. There's all this talk about Root, you know, the captaincy and the coach. It always seems to happen at the end of an Ashes series, or it has done the last few years. But, you know, ripping apart a captain and a coaching staff now, when you're down and, you know, he's had one bad series, coming into this series, they've played some reasonable cricket. It's a bit harsh, I think. So, I think we'll see a bit more fight from him. And again, we're probably going to a place where, we said at the start of the series, with Perth not getting it, if the series was close, these conditions are going to suit the English really. They're similar to what they get at home. So let's hope that we do see a bit of fight from them again.
The Breakfast Club.